Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Welcome to It's a Thing, the weekly podcast that, thanks to your support, continues on in 2020. We will be spending the rest of this year, as far as we know, analyzing the hottest trends, the happenings, the things that are things, by buying them, seeing them in the store, reading about them in books, and hearing about them from you. Thanks for joining us.
I like to think of ourselves as a cross-platform culture accommodation service.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. What a catchy slogan.
We'll put that on our on our one sheet for
basically a bumper sticker
B.
Waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Sorry, say that again. Cross-platform.
I don't even know what I said.
Multimedia, transgenerational.
Culture accommodation.
Culture accommodation.
Rather. Yeah.
Engine. Thing spotters.
We basically help you understand the world that isn't important better.
Exactly. We're translating
it's a break. We're a break. We're a break from the rest of that stuff that makes you crazy. Right?
Dude, we really are.
I think that's,
and it is
that's really
such a delight. I mean, it is such a delight to just like arrive here and shamelessly turn off every other part of my brain except mm-hmm. the fun mm-hmm. part.
Is it food? Is it rugs? Is it music? Is it, you know, whatever it is, we're going to have fun talking about it.
We're going to have fun. Just
we,
this one time.
We both were at the, it's not the Consumer Electronics Show anymore.
No.
It's just CES.
Plain old CES.
Good old, it's like KFC was for a while. And it doesn't mean, it doesn't stand for anything. Yes, the Consumer Technology Association puts on CES where people show off electronics and other things. And we were
it was
there.
Very business to business this year, I thought, actually.
Really?
I was surprised at how the parking lot in particular seemed to be full of companies that I had never heard of, mm-hmm. a lot of which make some sort of autonomous vehicle aftermarket or third-party situation.
I saw a lot of smart home stuff, a lot of practical stuff. That's funny that, yeah, it's such a it's a big show. You can have multiple perspectives.
I mean, I did see a lot of that stuff in the Sands. Mm-hmm. Very, mm-hmm. like, base needs kind of.
I never went to the Sands.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do much of the convention center. I will say I was in and out of there pretty quickly, like did some interviews, did a panel, got on a plane. But the thingiest thing that happened to me in Las Vegas was that in the Las Vegas airport, there's a Popeyes.
Wait.
And the Popeyes.
Not, what gates were you at? Because you were not at the D gates because there are no Popeyes gates. In the D gates.
D gates. There is a Popeyes right when you come in the door from security.
There's
in fact, I had seen it on the way out. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm coming here when I have whatever version of a hangover I have, whether it's the real kind or just the I have been in Vegas
just the
kind,
traveling kind. Yeah.
On my way home. And so I walked up there and I was like, oh, my God, they have the chicken sandwich. Now, for those of you who haven't been here in America for the last 6 months, you may not realize what I'm talking about, which is the Popeyes chicken sandwich that launched a few months back, actually almost a year ago, I think now.
It is.
And promptly became the sensation of America. Like it was sold out. People were shooting each other, getting in fights in line to order them. There was a whole Saturday Night Live skit about it. Then somehow Popeyes ran out of chicken. Again, to make sandwiches despite keeping their restaurants open, and they just like put the chicken sandwiches on pause for multiple months, and then they were back, and I have been wanting to try them because I'm not proud to admit it, but occasionally I go to Chick-fil-A because that is a good sandwich. Don't judge me.
It's a good sandwich, like, not gonna lie.
It's like The Good Place, you know, that episode where she's like they have this sandwich,
you lost
back
your points. Yeah,
and if you eat it, it means you hate gay people, but the sandwich is so good it's really confusing. Anyway, I went to Popeyes. They had chicken sandwiches on the menu. I walked up to the guy. No line. No line. And I was like, may I please have a spicy chicken sandwich? Fully waiting for him to just be like, no.
Oh, hell no.
We don't have those.
What do you think this is?
They did. And he was like, It'll probably be about 4 minutes because the guy in front of you ordered like six.
Oh, gee.
He's like, people just run from security to the Popeyes. So, friends, I have eaten the Popeyes spicy chicken sandwich, and I am here to tell you, it is so spicy. I almost died.
Wow, really?
Crazy spicy. So, just a word to the wise on that one, but it was, oh my God, it's delicious. The bun is delicious.
Well, delicious. That leads right into my first thing, which is that the quality of the food at CES, particularly the press food at the evening press events, markedly improved.
Really?
It's gone up and down over the years, you know. There's been good years and bad. But it feels like my expectations lately have been, we'll get some mini burgers, we'll get some finger pizzas, we'll get some chicken nuggets, you know. It'll be all right. This year, I had full slices of pizza at Showstoppers, baked in front of you by a chef.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Full,
I shouldn't have skipped that.
Full burgers, not mini burgers. Like lasagna, just take as much as you want, right? Like, I don't know if this is a sign of a strong economy or something, but the food budget was not skimping at the press events this year.
Wow. Food is cheap, I guess.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm sort of horrified to admit this, but I didn't go to any of those evening events. Mm-hmm. I did go to a restaurant called Esther's Kitchen in downtown, like the Arts District, Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice down there.
Might as well have been in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Bay Area. Like, it's the hippest place I've ever been.
No, there's great stuff.
I mean, not ever, but it was certainly the hippest place I've been in Vegas. Absolutely spectacular homemade pasta, like fresh made pasta. Some of the best sourdough bread I've ever eaten. Like, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have been less CES.
You know, food quality on the rise. I'm going to say, I mean, I'm talking about free press food, particularly when I'm talking about CES, but honestly, we had pretty good food all the way through. Even the food on the convention floor that I was forced to buy at one point was a Quiznos, and it was decent.
I wonder if thanks to sort of like food culture, because thanks to Food Network all the way back, everyone's expectations are just higher.
Yeah, maybe
by
that's
the way,
it.
Free press food is like an amazing name for a food reviews magazine waiting to happen.
Where you just review the catering at press events?
The free press food. You could do that, or, you know, it's just sort of like a journalism joke. I don't know. Either way, that's fun to say.
Yeah, yeah. Free press food. You've got a good point there.
We should register that domain, which definitely is not a thing. That's a thing anymore. So I have been reading the new William Gibson book, Agency. And, well, I finished it. But I didn't mean that to be a brag. I just, in case he's listening, I wanted him to know. And I didn't stop halfway. Anyway.
You good with that, Bill? All right, great.
So, as you know, William Gibson is like the arbiter of things that are cool. And his characters, especially his female characters, are always sort of like this understated brand of fashion awesome. Mm-hmm. And in that book, his heroine carries and is frequently referencing a Muji bag. M-U-J-I.
And yeah, isn't like, the shopping bag from the store Muji, but a bag bought at Muji.
Yep, exactly. I assume it's like a backpack or a duffel is kind of the vibe I get from the book. They never really describe it. It's just he always like name drops cool stuff and then you're just supposed to keep up. So eventually I finally Googled it and I was like, or DuckDuckGo'd it. And I was like, oh, this is neat. And then I was in LA and there was a Muji store.
Mm-hmm. There sure is. Right? Been there.
Yep.
It's a good one. Yeah.
And it is beautiful, beautiful. And then, listen, my secret sauce for when a thing reaches thing status is when it's a trifecta of encounters. So first it's in William Gibson's book. Mm-hmm. Second, I see the store on Sunset Boulevard, like in Hollywood, in surrounded by all these other tacky things. And it's like show stopping, gorgeous. And then third, I just walked by a lady on the street in Oakland and she was talking to her friend about Muji bags. And I was like, boom, it's a thing. So Muji has actually, and it's been around. It's not a thing, right? It's been around in the United States for a long time, Japan even longer. It's kind of like, it's described by some as the IKEA of Japan. But it's really just
sort of
much more than that.
I've heard it called the Target of Japan, too. It's IKEA in that everything they have is Muji. It's not,
right.
You know, it's not, there's no brands there. It's all just from Muji. But it's Target in its like more, it's more focused on the interior of your home than furniture.
But the one in LA too is also clothes and fashion. So then I said that really bad.
It's focused on things you use rather than like IKEA is focused on furniture. Muji is like clothes and bags and what are those things called? The little humidifiers.
Humidifiers, right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like organization stuff. And yeah.
Yeah, like water, you know, kettles for boiling water and slippers. Yeah. I mean, so all kinds of things. And then its whole look and philosophy is just like super stripped down, mm-hmm. which seems kind of perfect for the William Gibson style. Like I can see why he fell for it. But I do think it's very interesting that even though it's been in the U.S. it opened its first flagship store in the U.S. in 2007. So it's been in New York for a long time.
Okay.
But just seems to be, for whatever reason, hitting kind of peak awareness right now. And it keeps showing up. And I am just going to say, side note, this is beautiful. It has beautiful things.
Yeah. Everything. I mean, I want to live in a Muji. Sometimes we go to Muji and we're like, I don't know that we need anything here, but I want to move in here.
But I still want to live here. Exactly. Yeah. I want stuff to look like this. Like it's so clean and tidy. In fact, the name, Mujirushi Ryohin. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. Translates to no brand, good quality.
Which is awesome. It's like subverting the generic paradigm where we think of generic as meaning like, oh, it's just not very outstanding. This is like, it's outstanding because it's generic.
Right. And they are known, as Rich points out, producer Rich is pointing out in the Discord, they are known for their notebooks. There's this kind of like fancy little notebook that you can get. And I think they even used to have Muji stores in airports for a while because you could always get like notebooks and pretty little things. But yeah, the bags, I had to go to the Sunset Boulevard store because I was reading all about this bag over and over. And they have these like great sort of canvas backpacks that are really low profile duffel bags. I was like, okay, I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
Bring it on, Muji.
There's a spectrum of these stores. There's on the high end, there's Tokyo Hands, which I don't think has crossed to the US yet. That's like a four level store usually. And each floor is like, here's all the things you need for stationery. Here's all the things you need for your bathroom. Here's all, you know, and it's just everything's practical. And then there's Daiso on the other end, which we have some of those here in the US. And that's just like your dollar store. It's just all like super affordable stuff for your home. And then Muji's in the middle where it's like, we're not super high end, but we have better stuff than the Daiso.
Right. And it's beautiful.
Can I tell you what I saw when we were walking through Ginza in Tokyo?
Definitely. One day?
The Muji Hotel.
What? No way.
Because we were both like, is there a store in there? Because we say Muji Hotel. No, it's a hotel that is just designed by Muji. So you can, in fact, live there, sort of.
Oh, my God. So there is a possibility that they could, in fact, style my life, too.
Uh-huh.
What I want them to do.
Right.
Also, I would just like to remind the audience that at no point do we like coordinate.
No,
this show. I mean, maybe things that are slightly Japanese were on my mind because Tom was in Japan. But like, this seems to be a delightful accident, as so many things are.
And we weren't out there looking for Muji stuff in Tokyo either, because we can get that at home. We were always looking for stuff we can't get at home, and we just were walking down the street. We're like, Muji Hotel, like that's amazing.
That is amazing.
It's like $250 a night, roughly. Stay at the Muji Hotel.
Kind of like about right for Muji. Yeah. Like a little expensive, you know. Mm-hmm.
So like it's up on the Hyatt end, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like I found a nice Muji tote, sort of a rucksack, they call it, which has got to be the one that this lady carries in the book. It's $80. But you can get a backpack for $50. So.
Yeah. Muji.
Not bad. Muji.
Definitely.
It's a thing.
Definitely a thing.
Just watch for it.
Another something that might be becoming a thing. It's definitely a thing in the UK already, but becoming a thing a little farther afield, including here in the United States, is professional darts. And to the point where there's like, there's like the traditional darts society, but there's also like a new commercial darts league that tries to be a little more fun with like villains and heroes, kind of almost wrestling style, where they boo people who come out on stage. But in looking around at darts before this show to find out like, okay, what's the scoop on darts? Cause I heard about it on the Economist podcast. It's like, oh, darts is conquering America. It's becoming super popular and it's on TV now there. I found out about Fallon Sherrick. Fallon Sherrick landed a double 18 to become the first woman to win at the PDC World Championship in December.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I'm looking this up. All these noises are like, really?
I'm going to play you a little.
It's like that time you tried to make hockey a thing.
Darts is big. The hockey becoming a thing was just wishful thinking. I'll admit to that right now. But the darts thing, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just like, apparently darts is getting
big. Tell me more.
Fallon Sherrick has become the first woman to win a match at the PDC World Championship. Here is the broadcast from British television. I think it's on the BBC. Little excerpt here, if I can get it to play, that is. And it, of course, won't cooperate with me right now.
Aww.
Aw, man. But they cheered her. Like, it was like a standing ovation.
Like, cheered. Oh, yeah. My God. This is amazing.
Her win was greeted by a room full of mostly men singing, "We love you, Fallon, we do." She made the TV and radio morning show circuit the next day in Britain. Twitter gave her the blue check mark the next day.
No way.
And she beat number 11 Mensur Soljovic to make it to the next round the next day. So became the second time a woman had beat a man in professional darts and took home £25,000 in prize money. She will also compete in the U.S. Darts Masters in New York and has been invited to all the other World Series of Darts events in Denmark, Germany, New Zealand, and Australia.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. This is "We love you, Fallon, we do" is like the greatest. The greatest. She's by the way, the write-up from the staradvertiser.com is like... There we go.
Smashes the glass ceiling and wins at the World Darts Championship. The first woman to beat a man at the World Darts Championship. Fallon Sherrick is that woman on the 17th of December 2019. She defeats Ted Evans to write her name into the history books.
I mean, it's like a soccer match.
That is incredible. By the way, we need more singing.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I kind of like the singing at the sports events. It's pretty great.
Right? Like, the U.S. needs more drunken singing. We just do not have enough of that.
We got plenty of the first. We just need to add the second.
Yeah. Come on. We're drunk all the time.
We've covered that quite assiduously on the show.
Except for, you know, the mocktail thing.
Yeah. So The Economist says that darts is on the rise. Like, that's not me.
Yeah,
but
I see that.
Fallon Sherrick also somebody to keep an eye out for.
I, when she shows up, I feel like I can picture her on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen. It also is kind of delightful that she looks really fit. And these articles are like, it's usually these sort of out of shape
men,
portly drunk guys.
Like beer swilling. Yeah.
It's amazing. Look at her at the morning show. I love this. Okay. All right. I could be down with darts becoming a thing. I have a dartboard in my backyard.
Yeah. And the beauty of it is. Anybody can play it. It's hand-eye coordination, but it's not anybody can be that good at it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not everybody is, in fact, hand-eye coordinated.
Mm-hmm. Takes skill.
I love it. This next portion of the show comes to you from the shopping portion of the show. I think we need like a you're going to have to buy things now sting.
Right. We need a money cash register going off.
Exactly. Like my next thing is going to cost you. I have noticed a surprising uptick, partly because I've been sort of lightly house hunting. So I've been looking at a lot of staging. Mm-hmm. And then I've been noticing it in magazines and also occasionally on HGTV. Big time uptick in cowhide area rugs, which I think I probably notice all the time because I think they look super cool. And I've always thought of them actually as exclusively the province of like super cool people. Like just people who are super stylish, right? Like mm-hmm. the ones who also have, you know, a room with a bunch of like Moroccan poofs and neat artifacts uh-huh, that they uh-huh. picked up while they were traveling.
Like, oh, I got that pottery in Morocco. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Like that's the person who I feel like always has a cowhide rug. And it's sort of like never occurred to me that that was an accessible item mm-hmm. that I too could own, because I was like, I don't have any Moroccan poofs. Like I'm out.
Yeah.
But turns out they're a thing. And I think they've gone pretty mainstream. And when I tried to look it up, it was like Wayfair, cowhide rugs that you can best cowhide rugs for 2020. And then Amazon has one for $159. And the thing that put me over into thing territory is probably, okay, here's the trifecta. First, I saw it in staging mm-hmm. several times.
Sure.
Second, I saw it show up in a like Crate and Barrel magazine. And then third, I got an Instagram ad for a dog blanket that you put on your couch that looks all good, but it's washable. And one of the patterns was cowhide, which PS looked super cool. And then I went, because Instagram ads work terrifyingly well, I like clicked through and I was going to buy it. And it is the one that is out of stock until the end of February.
Now, these are mostly faux cowhides, right? I mean, yes, there are probably also real cowhides, but the majority of on this Wayfair link that you put here is faux cowhide. So you're not herding cows.
Well, most of them are, but not all.
When you sit on your cowhide and eat your burger.
Right. There are a lot of faux ones. The one I found on Amazon for $160 is real, which I found sort of surprising.
So going to be my next question. So the real ones aren't necessarily more expensive than the faux ones.
No, I mean, $160. I thought that was actually pretty inexpensive. So that I was surprised to discover that not only are they a thing that a normal can have, mm-hmm. such as me with my medium taste, but that they're not even that expensive, even if they're real.
Yeah, this print, this Guthridge Animal Print handmade cowhide area rug is $300.
Yeah.
But the real one you mentioned was cheaper.
Yeah, much cheaper on Amazon. And then there's a faux one on Wayfair for $109 from the Modern Farmhouse shop, which I guess is apparently my style.
This feels like the kind of thing that will be emblematic of a decade, right? Like I could see this becoming a thing where people are like, oh yeah, cowhide rugs. Everybody's got a cowhide rug. They're so cool. And that's great. And they're totally. Not that expensive. And then we look back like, oh, remember the 20s when everyone had cowhide rugs?
When everybody had cowhide rugs. How embarrassing. Yeah. I know. I don't. Yeah. And I'm super curious.
There's a zebra one too.
Well, it does. There is a whole faux animal print thing happening too. Mm-hmm. For example, I may have purchased a faux fur cheetah, like teddy jacket. And now I have two, but it was animal prints in general.
Just yesterday, my wife was very proud to wear her cheetah print shirt from Stitch Fix to work.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
So maybe the cowhide thing is just a like an offshoot of how animal prints are really huge right now. And then they were like, oh, it turns out this is a great opportunity to bring this like previously accessible only to the most stylish humans. I don't know why I don't. It's just
no, you're right. Weird... When I think of a cowhide rug, I think of a place that is marble, has a huge fireplace and a lot of gold.
Yes, kind of. And then the cowhide rug is right in front of the fireplace mm-hmm. and it's totally impractical and you would never do that.
And then, you know, the really douchey guy from Die Hard is laying on it with his champagne and grapes. And
I mean, this one at Wayfair is $109. See, this is the shopping part. This one at Wayfair is $109. It has 1,994 reviews and the reviews are 4.75 of a star.
The zebra one's only $90.
I want to get one. I think I'm going to have to get one. Stupid. It's a thing. You cost me so much money. I haven't bought all my like.
We should always have a cooling off period where neither one of us should be allowed to buy anything during the show.
You're right.
You have to wait until after the show. And if we still want it, it's fine.
Also, that's rude to buy things during the show. But I'm coming close.
I've totally done it.
I've totally done it. This lady posted a picture of it in her office and it looks so cool. Oh my God, I want one.
Yeah. They also, you know, it's because they have the irregular side too, because it's even the faux ones are meant to look like they came from a cow. So
yeah,
it's got like that funky little, like, you know, yeah, it's not just a square.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to your feedback. And the funniest thing about it is that a thing that I did purchase either during or immediately after last week's show was, in fact, the mini Instant Pot, which I have not yet tried out. But this weekend, I'm making the fluffy pancakes. And Christopher wrote in with some Instapot wisdom just in time and says, Instapots turn kitchens into fairy wonderlands of deliciousness, which thank goodness. That's outstanding. He said they also facilitate the hiding of vegetables and meals for recalcitrant children. The fluffy pancakes will bring you in the approximately 74,219 ways to cook quinoa will keep you coming back. Wait, do you like quinoa? Writes Christopher. Have you ever tried quinoa that has been dry roasted before you add liquid? It smells like peanut butter when you're roasting it, and it's even more delicious in dishes that way. It's kind of like roasting your chickpeas before making hummus. Dry roasting grains. It should be a thing, though I think maybe it's not yet.
Man, we were in this broadcast center at CES where we had other broadcasters in suites next to us, and you couldn't help but overhear conversations, especially when they're recording their shows. And there was this one guest. I have no idea who it was. I don't know what he was there for, but the thing I overheard was like, yeah, I had really delicious quinoa yesterday, and I'm not the kind of guy who eats that sort of thing. I'm a meat eater.
Oh, really? Because veganism.
I know, right?
Yep. Yeah. Totally. In fact, West Bay Stars in the Discord immediately was like, the Instant Pot is going to makes going vegan work.
Hmm. Yeah, certainly.
Which I could totally picture. Yeah.
Yeah. Charles thinks he's seeing a new drink thing. He says, I think Peach Crown Royal is becoming a thing. I have neighbors asking where to buy it, and our local stores are running out.
What?
Certainly sign of a burgeoning thing.
I mean, it usually is, but that sounds disgusting. Hold on, I'm looking this up. There's a Forbes article about it from last February. Crown Royal announces new peach-flavored whiskey.
Crown Royal usually has like kind of a butterscotchy, it's not flavored, but it has kind of a butterscotchy taste to it. So I guess peach is on that Venn diagram. Maybe people who love that Crown Royal get the peach.
I am having a problem. Is flavored whiskey a thing? Apparently it is.
Yeah, we've had the lemonade, like the Jack Daniel's lemonade and all that sort of thing. So that part kind of makes sense, I guess. Crown Royal usually is trying to bill itself as a little more high brow, but
this Forbes article does note that in 2019 the trend toward flavored whiskey isn't going anywhere, which I didn't really even know was a thing. I gotta say though, I hate peach flavored, like faux peach things, and
like peach
it's always
that's what it like always peach makes
schnapps,
me think of,
or the thing where you order an iced tea in a restaurant and that iced tea is always peach flavored, and they never tell you that. They're never like, by the way, it's peach flavored. And I don't know why it would be, but it always freaking is. And sure enough, this article is like, mix it with iced tea. Yeah, because apparently everybody makes a peach. And it's disgusting.
They're all just using Snapple. That's what it is.
I hate it. I hate it. So apparently that is a thing, but I'm not on board.
I'm not on board with the flavored whiskey. Maybe I'm being snobby. As a counterpoint example, on my flight back from Las Vegas, I got a beer. I said, I want a beer. And she's like, what kind do you want? She listed off all the kinds. And they had an IPA and they had Blue Moon. And I was like, Miller Lite. And she brought it and I drank it and it tasted great.
Oh, yeah. You know how I feel about Coors Banquet beer.
Yeah.
The greatest.
Sometimes. But yeah, I don't know about the flavored whiskey yet.
Ala'a, who is our Middle East correspondent, which is awesome, shares a thing from the Dubai Mall and says, I think the second part of the below email, which is a photo from said mall, reflects the thingness of light, which, by the way, is a beautiful phrase, capturing Instagrammable moments at the sea of light at this mall in Dubai, which, like, of course, Dubai is doing it bigger and better and with many bajillion more LED lights than anything you'll ever see.
You know,
But it's true. Like it's basically a giant 300 meter long light installation in the United Arab Emirates.
When he sent this email, it struck me that I spent a lot of time talking about Dream Labs when we were talking about light, when your thing was light last time. And I did not give enough credit to the illumination exhibits around Tokyo that they have during the winter, especially around Christmas time, which are all like that.
Like, oh, that, yeah, that's the thing I'm talking about.
Yeah. Where you just, you go outside and there was one for Aladdin. Where it's just like the lights were synced with the soundtrack of Aladdin. There was one in this park that was just, you know, Christmas music playing, and it would turn on and the lights would dance and then they'd go dark, and it was packed. All these things were packed.
Because they're Instagram crack.
Totally. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. SCW Lung in Discord said, could competitive karaoke be a thing? I saw this posted in a local subreddit yesterday. It's tokaraoke.com. And our producer, Rich, noted that his cousin used to be in a competitive karaoke league in Brooklyn a few years ago.
What? No way.
I know.
I'm looking it up now. Just
I mean,
to
it's
see.
No darts, but... yeah, by apparently way, everything is becoming a league sport, including karaoke.
Days after we talked about axe throwing on the show, I can't remember if I told you guys the story or not, but one of my coworkers at Marketplace sent me a Slack and was like, my hairdresser is in a competitive axe throwing league. And I was like, what?
Two Karaoke apparently stands for Toronto Karaoke. It's Toronto's only social team-based karaoke league. And their big title is like kickball, but better.
Oh, my God. We are so competitive. Although, I don't know who I mean when I say we, because that's Toronto, so not us.
Yeah. We as humans are competitive.
We as humans. Thank you for your feedback, your good ideas, your thing spotting, and of course, your actual financial support of the show via patreon.com/itsathing. It's shout out time.
Oh, shout out to the sonorous Jake Woods.
The orotund Louis Saint Amour.
And the stentorian Mike Akins.
I'm pretty sure producer Rich comes up with these because he likes fancy words, but
that's
it's working for me.
Vocabulary, right?
It is working.
Well, we have come to the end of another thing time, but we shall be back.
We shall next week, even. Yay. Yes, so keep the ideas coming. Keep your feedback coming. feedback@itsathing.me. And of course, you can always become a member of It's a Thing and get our access to our Discord, so you can join us live during the show tapings, which I'm not gonna lie is really fun.
Yeah.
Also an ad-free RSS feed, and potentially even, depending on your budget, a shout out.
That's patreon.com/itsathing, and email us your things, folks. feedback@itsathing.me.
See you next week.
Bye.
No, bye. I'm
speaking lies.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.